My name's Chris Little and I'm from the Overseas Development Institute. I'm speaking with Diana Kirster, who is an associate member of the Governance for Development and Peace team at the OECD Secretariat. She's also doing her PhD research in the Department of Politics at Oxford. What do you think the primary challenge facing women in post-conflict and transitional settings is?
Before I address this question, I think it might be important to point out that, in my view, this question is perhaps not the most useful one to ask in order to understand or help tackle the challenges that women face in post-conflict and transitional settings. I think there are several problems with this question, and that some of these problems reflect limitations of current donor approaches to supporting women in these environments. So let me just point out three of these problems before I give a very cautious answer. First, I think it's really important that we focus on the links between the many challenges women face in these situations rather than trying to isolate one or two challenges. We know that women face a large number of burdens in these environments, and that these challenges are often closely linked to one another in various ways. So, for example, conflict-related violence against women, which is getting a lot of attention, can reduce their ability to be economically active, which in turn is then likely to reduce their opportunities to participate in post-conflict political processes, which is another challenge. But the connection also works the other way around. Women's low representation in these political processes and institutions and their economic dependence can also make them more vulnerable to violence. So these challenges are linked in various ways to one another. But the challenges women face are also often linked to wider challenges associated with the state-building processes and associated with wider features of post-conflict and transitional settings. So, for example, research by Frieda and others has shown that female politicians in the range of post-conflict environments describe high levels of corruption and highly personalized male-dominated political parties, both arguably common features of post-conflict settings, as the key barrier for women gaining political influence, because women lack the access to financial resources and the access to patronage networks and male networks that are necessary to become influential in these environments. So I think in order to support women more effectively in these situations, it is extremely important to understand these connections between different challenges and to work to address them together. And that's one key conclusion, actually, that comes out of recent research in this area, including the new OECD report on gender and state building and the ODI literature review on women, peace, and security. And these reports also highlight that donors don't do this very well yet, and instead tend to operate in silos, failing to understand or address the connections between these different areas. So again, trying to isolate one challenge may not be the right approach when we try to understand or work to improve women's experiences of these situations. So that would be my first word of caution before answering this question. Second, I think it is important to emphasize that this category of post-conflict and transitional settings, of course, contains a very diverse set of situations, and women's experiences may therefore differ quite significantly from one situation to another. And understanding each specific context and women's specific experiences of this context, of this particular context, is a critical starting point for any effective external support. And so therefore, there's some risks involved in generalizing across these diverse settings. A third and final word of caution, if I may, I think there's not only risk in generalizing across different post-conflict and transitional settings, but also in generalizing across different groups of women. Recent research, again, including the OECD and the ODI reports I mentioned earlier, has shown quite clearly that women's challenges and priorities can differ significantly depending on their backgrounds, depending on their other identities related to class, ethnicity, religion, and so on. For example, the OECD research pointed to the example of Nepal, where Dalit women have organized around caste discrimination, Madhesi women around exclusion along the lines of class, language, and specific customary practices, and Janajati women prioritize access to education, health, and employment. The research also pointed out that external actors are still struggling to understand and negotiate these cross-cutting identities and these divisions between women. So generalizing across different groups of women has some risks, and I think it's really important to acknowledge their diverse experiences before attempting to generalize. So to sum up my three words of caution here, I think isolating one primary challenge women face in post-conflict and transitional settings may risk obscuring it, perhaps as much as it clarifies, because of the links between different challenges, the diversity of post-conflict and transitional settings, and the diversity of experiences between women from different backgrounds. So with this in mind, I hope you'll excuse that my answer as to the primary challenge will be relatively abstract, because it needs to encompass these networks of challenges and this diversity of experiences. So I think one challenge that could perhaps be considered primary, and that it is quite common and fundamental, so poses a key barrier to addressing many other challenges women face, is a chronological one, a chronological challenge. And that there is often a perception that there are some tensions between short-term stability and longer-term goals, including women's rights and gender equality. So in an immediate post-conflict context, the most urgent priority is to establish a degree of stability, and that's usually considered a precondition for achieving other peace-building and state-building goals, including the realization of rights of marginalized groups, including women. And as a result, negotiations on the political settlement, so peace agreements or new constitutions, often tend to focus on accommodating actors and issues that can undermine stability. And women and their challenges are usually not understood as such, and are therefore often deprioritized.